Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Today's show is about keeping children healthy. In the second half of the program, we talk about protecting children from head injuries.
Soccer, called football by much of the world, may not be as dangerous as some other sports. However, head injuries still happen. Researchers are studying head injuries suffered by players and the long-term effects of those injuries.
But first, we talk about fighting childhood hunger in the United States. Millions of students in America depend on schools for meals during the school day.
That means they eat less when schools are closed over the summer. An aid group has found a way to reach out to some of these children with a former school bus. The bus has been converted or changed to provide the meals.
The group found certain pockets, or small areas, in the U.S. that did not have summer food programs for children. 16 million children belong to families that are considered food insecure. This means they do not have enough food and are not protected from hunger.
Jim Tedder brings us this story on fighting childhood hunger in the United States.
In the United States, millions of children depend on schools for meals during the school day. Most schools are closed for 3 months over the summer, meaning a lot of these children could be getting less to eat. In the Washington, D.C. area, a nonprofit group has found a way to provide food to boys and girls over the summer months. The group brings meals to them in a converted school bus. Laura Juarez-Cruz and her three children live in a mobile home park in Northern Virginia. She says many of her neighbors have low-paying jobs or none at all.
Right now, there's a lot of people that don't work, and it's hard to, you know, have them kids at the house and asking for food. And
like more than 21 million students across the country, her children receive meals for free or at very small cost at school. When classes end, however, so do the meals. To reach youngsters like these in the D.C. area, the Capital Area Food Bank launched a feeding bus. The group operates the program in partnership with a local grocery store. The feeding bus started making trips to needy communities in June, when school ended.
Yeah, when they saw the bus coming, they were happy. they like fruits.
Cecilia Vergatti is with the Capital Area Food Bank. She helped launch the program.
So we knew that there were pockets of poverty and there would be pockets of children that could really use this food. And so hence the bus idea was born.
To identify where the bus should visit, the food bank built what it calls a hunger map. It shows many neighborhoods that lack summer feeding programs. 16 million children belong to the families that are considered food insecure. Last year, the U.S. government fed more than 3 million such children. Many others were in need of services, like the food bank's bus. The federal summer food program has been feeding children since 1975. At first, its goal was to provide food for areas like summer camps and community center programs. In such places, about a third of the children receive free or reduced-priced meals during the school year. Audrey Rowe works for the United States Department of Agriculture, which directs the Federal Summer Food Service Program.
It wasn't created with enough flexibility to address the changes that may happen within the way the schools operated or the intentions of communities and how they provided programs.
She adds that fewer children are going hungry now because the agency has many more new partners. One of those partners is the Capital Area Food Bank. It has the ability to reach communities beyond the government program's target. It brings meals to housing developments and mobile home parks. I'm Jim Tedder.
I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English.
Welcome back to As It Is. We just heard about a bus that brings food to hungry children in the U.S. who are out of school for the summer. Next, we hear about protecting children from head injuries.
American researchers are studying head injuries suffered by young people who play soccer, also called football.
Whatever you call it, it is one of the most popular sports played by American children. Researchers want to know the long-term effects of the injuries that children suffer when playing the game. Anna tells us more about this issue.
Soccer is not a violent game, but players can hit the ball with their head and collide with other players, the ground, and goalposts. Catherine McGill is a neuropsychologist at the Children's National Health System in Washington, D.C. She examines many children who have suffered concussions. Concussions are the most common brain injury while playing soccer. She says concussions from soccer and other youth sports are increasing.
One, we're getting better, and I say we, meaning parents, coaches, and medical providers alike, are getting better at recognizing and responding to that injury. And that's a huge testament to media paying more attention to this and leagues paying more attention to the safety of their players. Also, kids are getting bigger, faster, stronger across the sports, and so more injuries may be occurring simply because of that, and more kids are playing sports and they're playing more frequently.
Catherine McGill spoke at a recent conference on ways to make soccer safer for young players. The meeting was held recently in Washington, D.C. Later, she spoke to VOA about her efforts. She says researchers are examining the effects of soccer-related head injuries. They want to know if repeated hits to the head can cause chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. CTE is a brain disorder that worsens as a person ages. She says parents often ask doctors about the use of the head by soccer players to purposefully change the direction of the ball. In the sport, this move is known as a header.
We're often asked by parents, what's the age? What age should they start heading, or should there be heading at all? And the answer is, this is a very individual decision. The age for one child may be very different for an age at another child, right?
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. Part of the American dream is to own a home. Many Americans borrow money when they buy a home. They use a mortgage loan, known simply as a mortgage, to help pay for the property. To get the money, the buyer signs an agreement with a bank or loan company. The borrower promises to pay back the money, plus interest, over a period of years. The word mortgage comes from two old French words. Mort means dead, and gage means to promise or pledge. Combine the two terms and you get death pledge. Perhaps this deadly-sounding name is why many people are afraid to buy a house and choose to rent one instead. Because of the word's French roots, we do not pronounce the letter T in mortgage. The second half of the word, gage, is part of another useful word, engage. Engage has many meanings. You can enter into battle with or engage your enemy. You can engage or ask someone to work for you. If you are engaged in a business, you've been taking part in it or doing it. To engage also means to hold someone's attention. If you have an engaging speaking style, you can hold the attention of others or engage them for a long time. An engagement can be a single promise to be someplace at a given time. For example, he has an engagement this evening and won't be able to make it. Or an engagement can be a serious promise to marry someone. You can say, the couple got engaged 2 years ago, which makes it a really long engagement. But let's leave the happy thoughts of marriage and get back to death. The French term mort gives a deathly meaning to other English words. Words like mortal, mortality, mortician, and mortuary. As a noun, mortal means a human being. As an adjective, mortal means something or someone is subject to death. All mortal creatures will die. Mortal can also describe something or someone belonging to this world. Many religious people believe that when we die, we simply leave our mortal life, or life on this world, for an afterlife. Something that does not die is immortal. Clergymen or other religious leaders often pray for a person's immortal soul. Mortal can also be used for something or someone with the ability to cause death. For example, someone who is your mortal enemy may want to kill you, or they just may never give up in the fight against you. In battle, if you suffer a mortal wound, you are likely to die from it. Mortal combat means a fight to the death. These three are all common word combinations using the word mortal. On the lighter side is the word mortified. When you are mortified, you feel so embarrassed or foolish that you want to die. But not really. We often use mortified in situations that are not very serious. Being a mortician, however, can be serious business. A mortician prepares dead people for burial. They also can help plan and organize funerals. The word mortician is a combination of mortuary, a place in which dead bodies are kept, and the suffix ician, as in physician. And that's Words and Their Stories from VOA Learning English. I'm Ana Mateo. Find more Words and Their Stories on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm Faith Lapidus with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about the 19th century artist Mary Cassatt. She was best known for her beautifully expressive paintings of women and children. Cassatt spent her life working to change traditional beliefs about art and a woman's role in society.
Mary Cassatt was born in 1844 near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Her father, Robert, was a wealthy investor. Her mother, Catherine, had a deep knowledge of books, art, and the French language. When Mary was 7 years old, her family moved to Europe for several years.
Mr. Cassatt wanted his children to experience European education and culture. The Cassatt family lived in Paris, France, for about 2 years before moving to Heidelberg in modern-day Germany. In 1855, Mary's brother Robbie died. Mr. Cassatt decided it was time to return to the United States. But first, the family stopped once more in Paris. It was an exciting time to be in that city. Mary and her family visited the Universal Exhibition. This event showed the success of French art and industry. Mary would have seen important works by the most famous French artists of the time.
She might also have seen the works of a revolutionary painter, Gustave Courbet. Courbet's art was criticized for its realism, so he was not permitted to show his work in the exhibit. Instead, he created his own exhibit space nearby. At an early age, Mary saw the different movements within the French art world. She would one day be part of this world and would make her own rebellious art.
During the 19th century in the United States, wealthy women usually did not have careers. Women generally learned how to care for a house. They might learn to play music, sew, and paint. But Mary Cassatt was different. She believed that her training in art was much more than a fun activity. She saw art as her future. In 1860, at the age of 17, Mary began classes at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. Her father did not approve of her decision to become an artist, but Mary did not let this stop her.
Mary Cassatt worked very hard and was a good student, but she realized that to become a fully trained artist, she had to go to Europe to study. Travel was impossible during the four-year American Civil War that began in 1861. So, it was not until 1866 that she returned to Paris. For 4 years, Mary studied in Paris and other smaller towns in France. Because she was a woman, she could not study at the French Academy of Fine Arts in Paris. Instead, she created her own program of study.
Cassatt worked hard copying the great paintings hanging in the Louvre Museum. She also studied with different teachers. In 1868, one of Mary Cassatt's paintings was accepted into the Paris Salon. This show was operated by the government-controlled French Academy of Fine Arts. 2 years later, the Salon accepted another of her paintings. Her career as a successful artist had begun.
In 1870, Mary Cassatt returned home to Pennsylvania. But life at home was not easy. Her father was no longer willing to support Mary's artistic career. She tried showing her paintings in New York City, but no one bought them. She exhibited her art in Chicago, only to lose them all in the Great Chicago Fire of 1871.
Luckily, a religious center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, hired her to copy two famous religious paintings that hung in Parma, Italy. Mary Cassatt had found a way to return to her beloved Europe and be paid to work. In Parma, she soon began to receive wide critical praise for her art.
Cassatt continued to have her works accepted in the Paris Salon, but she began to tire of the traditional values of the official art world. The Salon was very set in its ways. It rejected works that showed bright colors, unusual subjects, or any form of experimentation. Cassatt had to make a decision. Would she paint in a way that received public approval, or in a way that she found interesting and exciting? She found her answer in a group of rebellious painters, known as the Impressionists.
Mary Cassatt once said that she used to go to a Paris art seller's shop. She would flatten her nose against the window to take in all that she could of the art of Edgar Degas. She said his paintings changed her life. In 1877, Edgar Degas came to her studio and asked her to join his group of artists who called themselves the Independents. This group later became known as the Impressionists. These artists included Claude Monet, Auguste Renoir, and Camille Pissarro.
Degas and the other artists had decided that they would no longer follow the rules and restrictions of the Paris Salon. These artists refused to submit art to the Salon. Instead, they formed their own exhibition in 1874. Today, the works in this historical show are some of the most famous paintings in the world. But at the time, many people condemned their art.
Degas and the Impressionists were interested in painting the effects of light and how the human eye sees subjects. The Impressionists used bright colors, rough brush strokes, and thick paint to show light and movement in its many forms. They also painted subjects of everyday life. Traditional artists generally painted imagined scenes from history or literature. Mary Cassatt said this about Edgar Degas' invitation to join the Impressionists: "I accepted with joy. I hated conventional art. I began to live."
Cassatt spent 2 years producing works to show in the Impressionists' next exhibit in 1879. During this period, her parents moved to Paris. Finally, Robert Cassatt had accepted his daughter's skill and praised her growing success.
Paintings from this period include one of her mother reading a newspaper. It is called Reading Le Figaro. Mary Cassatt's loose brushwork skillfully captures the effect of the sunlight in the room. In Woman and Child Driving, she masters the effect of outdoor light and draws attention to a child's glowing face. Her works show people in private moments. Her subjects act naturally and are sometimes caught in movement.
Mary Cassatt did not stay with the Impressionists for long. She chose freedom over being part of a set art movement. In the 1890s, Cassatt started to experiment with making prints. She was influenced by a series of prints from Japan. She repeated their simple but very modern forms in her own prints. They include La Toilette, an image of a woman bathing. In Maternal Caress, a few simple lines express the deep love of a mother for her child. Mary Cassatt sold many copies of her prints when she exhibited them in Paris. And she would continue to explore the subject of mothers and children in her paintings.
In Baby Reaching for an Apple, Cassatt shows a mother gently holding her child as the baby looks with wonder at the fruit. The Boating Party shows a mother and child in a small boat. The diagonal angle of the painting is very bold and inventive. Cassatt held another successful exhibit in 1893. One critic said that no artist had painted the poem of the family with such feeling. Mary Cassatt had become one of the most successful artists of her time.
Cassatt bought a house in the French countryside and used her success to help others. She advised young artists. She also helped wealthy American art collectors choose fine works of art by Impressionist painters. She believed it was important that Americans be able to study such fine art at home. Thanks to her efforts, many Impressionist paintings became part of American art collections. Cassatt also worked hard to support women's right to vote in the United States.
Mary Cassatt won many top awards, but she refused to accept most of them. She said she was an early member of an independent art movement and was against juries, medals, and awards. Cassatt continued working and traveling into her late 60s. She later was forced to stop painting because of her failing eyesight.
Mary Cassatt died in 1926 at the age of 82. She spent most of her life working to change traditional beliefs about art, artists, and a woman's professional role in society. Today, her paintings are in the top museum collections in the world.
This program was written and produced by Dana Demange. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Bob Doty. For transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our shows, go to voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.